So good evening. Thanks for coming to our Cyber Sangha. Thanks for carrying on with your practice in these times when we really, really need it. So just a reminder, if you're having some difficulty with the Zoom itself, you can use the chat button at the bottom of your screen to communicate with Donna, and she'll try and help with that. So I know you've been having a series of conversations and talks about the paramis, and that's what we're going to do tonight as well. The paramis, for those who maybe don't know, are the 10 wholesome factors of heart and mind that the Buddha taught us as a way to bring strength and maturity to our practice. These are 10 qualities of heart that really establish the mind in a position of strength, in a position of really foundation and balance. And they are also the fruit of our practice. So like many of the qualities that we are developing in our practice, they support us in practice. And in turn, they are an outcome of our practice, and that cycle continues. And it's said that the Buddha, in his many, many, many previous lifetimes, spent his rebirths developing and cultivating these qualities, these paramis, so that he was building this foundation that enabled him to have the capacity to reach enlightenment in his lifetime as the Shakyamuni Buddha. So whether that particular mythology or way of seeing the world makes sense to you or not, I think that what's important to notice about it is that the Buddha really emphasized the importance of these qualities, that our practice, our journey towards liberation, towards enlightenment, is not happening in isolation from developing the heart. And these qualities are considered a blend of merit and insight, or a blend of wisdom and compassion, you might say. So by perfecting these qualities in our meditation and in our life off the cushion, in our standing up, walking around meditation, we are moving ourselves towards an ever deeper wisdom and an ever deeper compassion and understanding. So tonight I'm going to talk about determination. Or the translation that I prefer is resolve. That quality of steadfastness or ardency, commitment, dedication. The quality that allows us actually to show up tonight, to show up every time we practice, and particularly to show up when it's not as easy as it sometimes can be, or when it's more difficult, so that we're having to experiment with a new form, or perhaps it's more difficult for some of us sitting tonight because there's a lot of anxiety in our world, if not in our actual being, certainly around us. And so that quality that allows us to sit down nonetheless, to show up nonetheless, no matter what is happening, and to stay with the commitment that we've made to listen to the teachings and to practice the teachings this is what's known as the parami of resolve. So as we go on tonight, I guess I would invite you to consider how, in the light of what everything that's going on in the world right now, and how it may or may not be particularly affecting you, but certainly is affecting the world around you at the very least, how is this, how does this quality or the development of this quality, how does it support you? How does it support your world? So just to be thinking about that as, or to be having that in the back of your mind as we think about resolve. One way that it's sometimes talked about is that in order to have resolve, in order to have this steadfastness, what we're doing is cultivating or responding to a strong positive desire in ourselves. So of course we're told in the teachings of the Buddha that clinging to desire is the source of suffering. However, there are some desires, some intentions, some wantings that are more wholesome than others. And in this case, certainly the resolve, the wish to understand, to really understand, and to keep coming back until we do understand, this is considered a really wholesome kind of desire. And it's what fuels the capacity to be steadfast, to be ardent, to keep our commitment. This is what Ajahn Chah has to say. Ajahn Chah was a great Thai forest meditation master of the last century and the teacher of many of our teachers. And this is what he had to say. Just go into the room and put one chair in the center. Take the one seat in the center of the room. Open the doors and windows and see who comes to visit. You will witness all kinds of scenes and actors, all kinds of temptations and stories, everything imaginable. Your only job is to stay in your seat. You will see it all arise and pass, and out of this, wisdom understanding will come. So that's what we do every time we sit down on this cushion. We take the one seat in the center of our being and we open the doors and windows and see who comes. And it's not necessary to invite anybody and it's not necessary to kick anybody out. Because beings come, beings meaning experiences, thoughts, imaginings, sensations, they come and they go on their own. And our job, as Ajahn Chah said, is to stay in the one seat, to stay in that seat with a kind of unimpeded receptivity, a kind of unimpeded capacity to see who's coming, to see what's coming, and to see it go. And to not interfere, to not open the window a little further and say, come on, you out, go. Or to say, oh, you, come, sit down next to me in this chair. Here, let me pull up another chair and make you some tea. But just to stay steady, just sit. To see what comes, to see what goes, and to stay awake to it. And to notice that everything that comes also goes. To notice the ephemeral nature of what's happening in our lives and a stay in our seat. So we can think about the journey of the Buddha when he sat down under the Bodhi tree for his own enlightenment experience. So what happened for the Buddha as a young man is that when he left his palace, in this abbreviated form of the story, he left his palace and he saw suffering in the world. And he also saw a monk, a mendicant, and these things inspired him to want to understand. So in the way, in the format of Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey, this was his call to awakening. And it was followed by what Joseph Campbell would call the great renunciation of both, which I spoke about the last time I was here, or the last time I was in Albuquerque. I guess I'm not actually there. But the renunciation of both his material life and of his way of understanding the world that he had had up until that moment, and a kind of openness to see, oh, how actually is life? It's not the way I thought it was. So inspiration, renunciation, and followed by what the next phase that Joseph Campbell calls the great struggle, which requires this kind of resolve. And we know the story that we're told is that after many years of trying many, many different practices, the Buddha finally gave up all the different ways that he had up until that point and simply sat down under the Bodhi tree and determined, resolved not to get up until he understood the truth of life. And that while he was sitting there, Mara, or you might say every possible, as Ajahn Chah described, every possible imaginable experience came to him. And each time it did, he said, I see you. And when Mara became particularly strong and tried to shake him from his seat, he simply reached down and touched the earth as a witness to his right to be sitting there, his right to see what was true. And so he touched the earth to represent or to enhance, to strengthen his resolve. And it was through that resolve, through that determination to not be shaken from his seat, that he was able to see through and see the way things are. And as Joseph Goldstein tells us, there's a way, in a very real way. He says, whenever each one of us sits down on our meditation cushion, we're sitting under that Bodhi tree. We're sitting with that resolve to see what's true, to be awake. So how do we do that? What does it mean? You know, and part of what, of course, I'm sure you've all experienced, part of what keeps us on that cushion or keeps us coming back to our cushion, back to our practice, is a kind of combination of inspiration, of knowing what's possible, and also frustration with the world as it is. A kind of recognition that everyday life and everyday understanding is not bringing us lasting happiness, but that there is the possibility. So it's this combination of recognizing suffering and recognizing the possibility of the end of suffering that brings us to our resolve. And not in the way that it may more often be maybe in our culture the kind of resolve that has to do with ambition or striving or expectation or a kind of I'm going to get there, I'm going to get to the top, I'm going to be the best, but rather a will, a resolve to actually let go and see what occurs and stay with that in a, with a courageous heart. To be willing to begin again and again and again, both with returning to our meditation anchor, our breath, our body, our Brahma-Vihara phrase, this willingness to, no matter what happens, no matter how compelling our distraction is, to let it go when we notice it and come back to center, which is being deeply asked of us, I think, right now in the world. Because what's happening, the kind of panic that's all around us and the kind of anxiety, some of which is very reasonable and some of which is a kind of papancha, kind of like a manufacturing of the mind. It's really tempting us to get off our center, and it's pulling us off our center sometimes. And when we notice it, we have this amazing ability to just come back. That thing that we practice when we're sitting on our cushion, that's it. That's serving us in our day-to-day life, because it's teaching us how to come back to center. This is from St. Francis de Sales, and he's writing, saying this about Christian prayer, but it applies very much to our practice as well. If the heart wanders or is distracted, bring it back to the point quite gently. And even if you did nothing during the whole of the hour but bring your heart back, though it went away every time you brought it back, your hour would be very well employed. And we could say your life would be very well employed if that's what we did, is every time we notice the heart going astray, every time we notice ourselves getting caught up in things that bring us out of balance, if we were willing to just come back. Sharon Salzberg says all the time that it doesn't matter how many times you come back, it matters that you do come back. And in fact, that if you have to come back often in your meditation, then your that muscle of balancing, your rebalancing yourself gets built more quickly. I remember this one time when I was going on retreat at IMS. I think I was going on a long retreat. And just before I went on retreat, I was speaking with Joseph and he said to me, "Okay, get enlightened." And I kind of laughed because I thought, oh yeah, he could say that because maybe he's close. But me, I'm just trying to get through the retreat. And so I kind of laughed and he said, "No, I'm serious." And of course, that's our practice. That's our resolve. That's our resolve, is to wake up and see how it is, not to sort of kind of wake up, but to get as close to it as we possibly can. It's a kind of right effort, you might say, resolve. And often it is our teachers who inspire us. I remember when I was working for Sharon, she saw that I got a new yoga teacher, Hatha yoga teacher, and she was so much enjoying working with this teacher. And sometimes in the middle of the day, she would just stop and do like a forward bend or something. And she'd say, oh, I'm doing this because I love my teacher. And, you know, how true is that? You know, that we can sometimes, for my own self, I've just felt like my teachers have given me so much, Sharon in particular, but other teachers also, that out of respect for that generosity, I need to sit down. I need to do my practice. So that's one of the ways that we can inspire our own resolve. Another way that often resolve is built is by contemplating the reality of death. Contemplating the fact that we're not going to be here forever. And many of the things that we spend our time and our life chasing after aren't going to, well, actually all of the things other than this thing, aren't going to go with us when we die. And that contemplation is said to be that contemplation of the certainty of death and the uncertainty of its timing is said to be one of the classic ways that we inspire resolve. This is from the meditation teacher, Gavin Harrison, who is a man who's been living with the HIV virus for many, many years and talks about how it supports him in this kind of urgency to practice. He says, "It is my experience that in our willingness to grapple with the fundamental issue of life and death, as difficult as this might be, great passion and urgency are unleashed into the spiritual journey. This energy fortifies us during the hard times and serves us in precisely the same way that the Buddha was served so many years ago." And so here it is, kind of in our face. We don't know if we have this virus. We don't know if someone we love has it. We don't know if we do have it, whether we're going to get sick or whether that sickness is going to be serious. We don't know really so many things. And of course, that's always true in our lives. It's always true in our lives that we don't know if exactly when we're going to get the sickness that's going to be the end of our life. We don't know if we're going to be here in another breath, but of course it's easy to forget. And it's helpful sometimes to not have it in the front of our mind so that we can go about our business. But to forget it completely is not helpful, because then we're not so judicious about how we spend our time often. So here's the virus, and here's not only the virus, but here's the panic. And whether we're one of the people who feels panicked or not, certainly every time we turn around, there's somebody telling us why we should be panicked. And this kind of uncertainty of even just wondering, is that piece of information true? Is that piece of information true? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? That uncertainty, we can use it to kind of kick us in the pants and set us down on our cushion. If not for ourselves, then for the sake of those around us who are needing some sense of steadiness. And for those who can't find it for themselves or who are struggling to find it, maybe we can be supportive by being in a place of steadiness ourselves. Because Sangha is also very much one of the ways that we strengthen our resolve. Ajahn Amaro said the Sangha is a gathering together of people who are encouraging each other to have the strength and fortitude to keep going, to fulfill the resolution that we have within our own hearts to develop the good. And here's a poem from the poet Robert Francis called Wax Wings. Four Tao philosophers as cedar wax wings chat on a February berry bush in sun, and I am one. Such merriment and such sobriety, the small wild fruit on the tall stalk. Was this not always my true style? Above an elegance of snow, beneath a silk blue sky, a brotherhood of four birds. Can you mistake us? To sun, to feast, and to converse, and all together. For this, I have abandoned all my other lives. We're here for each other. Right now there are 21 of us. It's been varying a little as we've been sitting here, but 21 of us who took time out of our evening and took a chance on this funny way of having Sangha in order to support not only ourselves, but each other. And we know that one of the reasons that resolve is helpful is that when we have to make a decision every single time about whether we're going to sit down or whether we're going to stay sitting down or what we're going to do when we first wake up in the morning, that the kind of vacillation that can come with that really scatters our energy. So if we have a resolve that when we wake up in the morning, we're going to get up and sit, and we just do it, we don't think about it, we don't try to figure it out, we don't try to say to ourselves, well, maybe this morning is not a good time to sit because, I don't know, last night I ate that thing and I'm feeling a little weird this morning and it might be a crazy sit and, oh, but I think I really should because I told my teacher I would, but, and we go back and forth and back and forth and we think about how comfortable it is in our bed and how important it would be to be on our cushion and how much we really want to do it, how much we don't want to do it. And pretty soon that energy that we woke up with that would have served us well in the sitting has been dissipated, or a certain amount of it has been dissipated. So that in a very practical way, resolve is just a way to keep our energy concentrated. So we say to ourselves, I'm going to sit every morning, or I'm going to sit every other morning, or when I sit down, I'm going to stay still for 20 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever our period of time is. And then we don't try to rethink it. And if you've ever done that, you know that if you sit down thinking, well, I'm not sure how long I'm going to sit, that you can spend a lot of the sit deciding, oh, am I done yet? It's just practical to make a decision and stick to it sometimes. And in the bigger picture, when we resolve to wake up in this lifetime, or to get as close to waking up as we can, then we set our course. And we can measure every action that we take, every decision, every allocation of our time and our energy against that North Star, against that resolution. Because it happened around our sitting on the cushion life that it feels unbearable. And it feels like we just can't do it another minute. But if we said we were going to do it for 40 minutes, maybe we'll stay. Suzuki Roshi said that in the Zazen posture, your mind and body have great power to accept things as they are, whether agreeable or disagreeable. So just taking the posture in the mind and the body, making that resolve has power in it. It's good to practice our resolve on the easy stuff so that when the hard stuff comes along, we know what to do. So if we say, I'm going to sit every day for, let's say, 20 minutes even. On the days when it's easy, we do it. So that on the days when it's harder, we have the habit in ourselves. And faith is one of the things that supports our resolve. The kind of faith that comes from verifying our experience and knowing that experiencing in our bodies that staying with this is beneficial, that it helps us be more clear, it helps us be more kind. We find out for ourselves, we try it out, and if that's what we find out, then we can use that remembering of that, because sometimes we forget. We forget, why am I doing this again? Having a strong concentration or a strong focus is part of what supports our resolve. So when our resolve is shaky, it can be really helpful to find a way to do our practice that is emphasizes concentration rather than the kind of more open awareness that we might be able to access when the resolve is already strong. And so we have the capacity to use our discernment to use skillful means. Stephen Levine has taught us that part of what strengthens resolve is a certain kind of mercy toward ourselves, certain kind of forgiveness of our difficulties, our pain, and just knowing that we can hold ourselves tenderly when life gets difficult, that this kind of what he calls mercy, softness in the belly, keeps us on the path. Taking our time, going one step at a time, not getting too far ahead of ourselves. The great Tibetan master Tulku Urgen Rinpoche is very well known for saying, small moments many times. That's how we get to enlightenment. We stay resolved and we just keep doing it bit by bit. Sharon sometimes refers to it as the torment of continuity. This kind of willingness to stay awake for every part of our day. I remember one time when I was on retreat with her and I was quite young and I had a lot of energy, different kind of energy than I have these days. And I had this idea, I was on a long retreat, and I had this idea that I wanted to stay up all night practicing one night. And I was really kind of drawn to the idea and inspired by it. And I went to talk to Sharon about it. And she said, well, you could, but it might really blow your whole, it might blow your energy out. And then after that night, you might find yourself really struggling. And she said, if what you're trying to do is strengthen your practice, instead of doing that, why don't you just pick a couple of hours of the day and resolve that every single thing you do during those hours, you'll hopefully. And at first I thought, well, what do you mean? That's what I'm doing. I'm on retreat. I'm doing everything mindfully. But in fact, when I took her instructions to heart and I really made a strong resolve that not just while I was on my cushion, but as I got off my cushion, as I walked to where my shoes were, as I put on my shoes, as I walked to get tea, as I poured the tea, as I went to the bathroom, as I did everything that happened during the period of time, that I did it as mindfully as I could, the torment of continuity. My practice, as she predicted, became so much stronger and so much more consistent. So sometimes the way that we can strengthen the resolve is that very way of picking some period of time or some activity that we do during our day, and always, as much as we can, bringing mindfulness to it. And loving kindness is part of what is a support for our resolve. So we know when we're sitting on our cushion that, of course, we need to have a certain kind of firm dedication, a kind of fierceness. But if it doesn't include kindness, if it doesn't include spaciousness, then it will probably fail. So finding that balance of caring about ourselves and others, as well as the willingness to go through when it's hard. This is from Jack Kornfield. When we take the one seat on our meditation cushion, we become our own monastery. We create the compassionate space that allows for the arising of all things, sorrow, loneliness, shame, desire, regret, frustration, happiness. We take the one seat, and it's not really our business what happens. We don't have any control over what happens, but we have some control over how we respond and whether we stay in the seat. This is from the Sufi mystic Lala. Slowly, slowly, I tended the bellows of my throat, and the light inside grew and filtered out through the dark, so that within even it, I saw the truth. Step by step. So I want to make a little time for questions, and at the best it is if you have a question or a comment or a reflection that you'd like to share, go to chat, and as a way of raising your hand, you can just go to chat and type a question mark, or, you know, you don't have to type out your question, just let me know that you're there and you want to be called on, and we'll see how it goes. If you have any questions. Okay, I'll ask you a question. How is your resolve supported? What do you find in your life that keeps you coming back to your breath and to your practice? Be brave, because it helps us all when we do that. All right, Randy. You have to unmute yourself. It should be in the lower left corner. There's a little microphone.
Okay, so can I just talk?
Yeah.
Okay. sometimes when I'm just sort of feeling really anxious and, you know, worrying about what to do next, or how's this thing gonna go, or something like that.